coming up on the Psychedelic Therapy Podcast.
It's really not just about the individual. And that's also why I say that all this research about psychedelic healing and, you know, the benefits of psychedelics on individuals, it's just a limited part of it. We really have to create an understanding that is more collective. And, you know, traditionally, psychedelics have nothing to do with something individual only. Traditionally, psychedelics have been used always in group rituals and by groups and are affairs of the whole community. So this idea, you know, that a specific substance heals a specific disease for a specific individual, it's a very reductionistic approach. Healing, in terms of traditional practices, is really much more of a holistic affairs and has to do with the relationships of the individual with himself, but also with, of the individual with other individuals, the individual with the invisible world or, you know, the larger cosmological world of ancestors. And traditionally, disease, the concept of disease is very influenced by this idea that there is some kind of imbalance and some kind of disharmony between spheres.
Welcome to the Psychedelic Therapy Podcast, a weekly conversation series with leaders in psychedelic culture, designed for therapists, healers, retreat leaders, and passionate enthusiasts. Presented by Maya and hosted by me, Eamon Armstrong. Welcome to the Psychedelic Therapy Podcast. Today, I'm speaking to Bia Labate, the executive director of Chakruna, a popular psychedelic website and research institution. She is also the public education and culture specialist at MAPS and adjunct professor at the California Institute of Integral Studies. Bia is the author of over 20 books. On the show, we discuss the mission of Chakruna, to give a voice and platform to people who have been traditionally excluded from the field of psychedelic science. We discuss how psychedelic therapists can become more engaged with the movement and give back to the community. We explore topics of social justice in the field and Bia's own personal journey coming to California from Brazil. Finally, we highlight how psychedelics are really about collective liberation and how psychedelic healing is inherently political, from queering psychedelics to Black Lives Matter. Bia is a huge proponent of including more diverse voices in the psychedelic community, especially of queer, women, non-binary, Latinx, and Indigenous people in these important and societal shifting conversations. Well, Bia, you are quite a figure in the field of psychedelic research and medicine, and I am just really thrilled to get to meet you. I've heard a lot about you. People who I respect look up to you. Sarah Gale, who does the Zendo Project and is a friend of mine, speaks of you as an important mentor of hers. Tony Moss, who's been on this show, who's also someone I look up to, considers you a good friend. And the work that you've done in this field is so prolific and so important. And I'm just really honored that you're taking the time to speak with me today and to assist me in this task of supporting psychedelic therapists and healers. So I'm just grateful for you being on the show today.
Thank you. Gracias. Thanks for your kind words. I'm happy to be here too.
So I feel like the field of psychedelic medicine and psychedelic therapy, more than any other field that I can really think of, has a really vibrant conversation around ethics. We're in a moment where there's money coming into the field, there's a lot of opportunities, and there's a lot of conversation about the right way of doing things. And I think Chakruna is really the leader, as the publication Chakruna is really a leader in informing the public about the most important ethical considerations as psychedelics start going mainstream. And for those of us who've been passionate about psychedelics for a long time, we have a lot of concern about what might happen if these incredible compounds start going mainstream in a way that goes the way of sort of big pharma and doesn't actually end up supporting the healing of people, communities, and the world, but rather instead
goes into the sort of maintenance of the status quo. And so the first question I have to ask you here is, what are your biggest concerns, your biggest issues, the things that you are caring most about us needing to get right as psychedelics go mainstream, and particularly for the psychedelic practitioners, therapists, and healers themselves?
Yeah, thank you. I think you hit the nail on the head, or whatever you say that. You know, Chikruna is really about curating critical and reflexive conversations as psychedelic go mainstream. So that has been really the central part of our mission. There's a lot of work, you know, talking about the psychedelic renaissance and a lot of scientific research, a lot of publications, a lot of findings. But on the cultural level, there's not, you know, as much people doing the work. So as this goes more mainstream and get more chances to become legalized therapies and medicines, and also with decriminalization, a lot of people are arriving to the field, and a lot of people that are newcomers and don't have much history or roots or ground are interested. And with that, a lot of big money and big pharma and all kinds of entrepreneurs and venture capitalists and techies and software people and Silicon Valley people and celebrities and all sorts of, you know, attempts of people creating businesses. And the moment we are in, for those of us who have been on the fields, I particularly have been working on this, you know, for 23 years, it's kind of nauseating. It's so fast and it's so intense. And every day it's a new podcast, a new celebrity, a new documentary, a new PhD research, a new business, a new clinic, a new retreat center, a new drug development program, a new software, a new documentary, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, as the research blossom as well, as the regulation process advances, what are we doing to hold this space as cultures, as communities, as societies? What are the conversations that we're having to make sure that psychedelics are integrated into our culture? So I am an anthropologist, and I like to use this very much, this idea that we talk a lot about integration and set and setting and the individual and expectations. But it's not just about how the individual integrates that experience into his own biography or narrative or family relations or, you know, self-image or quality of life, but how do we as cultures integrate this powerful medicines into our lives and into our systems? So Chikruna is focused on this element of the cultural legitimacy, because a lot of the conversations go either towards the medical side and, you know, the potentials and the mantra, psychedelics heal and psychedelics are good for trauma, for PTSD, for anxiety, depression, blah, 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 blah. And a lot of conversations, you know, go towards the potentials for businesses. But what are we doing in terms of understanding what the substances mean and how do they have to be used and what are their roots and what are their the traditions that have behind this movement? So Chikruna is talking, operating on this level of culture. And even the people that bring a more reflexive tone to the conversation, so there's a lot of criticism, for example, on the drug war and all the negative impacts of the drug war and how the drug war has caused, you know, disproportionate incarceration or health problems or migration of populations and so on. But often even the critique of the drug war is not getting into the real merit that is behind all of this, is the taboo around drugs and what do they mean and why are we so scared of them and why there is so much fear and so much misunderstanding and so much distrust. So Chikruna's main take is that these substances, they are part of culture. They are integrated into our traditions, our roots as civilization, as people, as communities. They have deep roots in different historical times and different spaces. And we have to understand and honor that the substances are part of who we are. They are a legitimate and central part of who we are. They have to do with foundational aspects of human identity. So psychedelics have been used through history on different aspects. They're related to obviously healing, but that's just one dimension of it. And they're also related to identity, to territory, to arts, to the creation of culture, to transmission of culture, to socialization. So we're producing a lot of work that talks about the foundation, the grounds of the psychedelic movement. And we are also producing a lot of work talking about the critical and reflexive aspects of this mainstreaming. So what are the main problems? The main problems are the ones we already know, which was your question. So I guess I'm taking a long time to get there. It's this problem of lack of ethics, of, you know, considering. So it's not like psychedelics is not just like anything else. You know, if you're a big business person, oh, I'm going to invest in Formula One. No, I'd better invest in psilocybin therapy. It's not the same. It's not like you can't just invest on psychedelics as if it is any kind of business. Psychedelics have roots, and psychedelics are strong and powerful and carry a lot of responsibility and an inherent need for us to honor, to protect these traditions and these roots. It's not just something that you can, you know, do like any other kinds of businesses. And so we need to have very clear foundations for these businesses. And also as psychedelic go mainstream, we are focused on who is getting healed. If it's not for all, it shouldn't be, you know, if all aren't free, then no one is free.
There's an interesting point here, which is if psychedelics are not available, if there's not equal access, then psychedelics can actually increase inequality. Because if psychedelics allow us to heal, allow us to up-level, allow us to be more creative, and that's only available to the people who are already well-resourced, then that gap is just going to get wider. So it's not just that psychedelics could make the world a better place but might not. If psychedelics are co-opted just for the wealthy, just for the people who already have resources, and they're just going to expand that gap of inequality. So there's a lot of risk here if these medicines are not held in the safe, sacred, and appropriate way and available for all.
Yeah, a big part of Chakruna's work, and it's central to our mission, is really increasing access, diversity, equity. And so Chakruna is all about giving voice and platforming all the people that have been traditionally excluded from the field of psychedelic science. So women, people of color, indigenous people, queer people, people from the global south, and also disciplines such as anthropology and social sciences, who also have a lot to say about healing and who also collaborate on the understanding of the phenomena of what it is to heal, because healing is not just about, you know, a property that treats one disease. Healing is a more holistic affair. And so Chakruna is a lot of our work has been to give space for these voices. And we produce the Chakruna Chronicles as a series of articles that we try to address all of these issues. We have a series on queer topics. We have a series on sex and power. We have a series on inclusion and diversity. We have been producing a few articles about mainstreaming and commercial implications. And we also produce a lot of conferences about this specific topic. So we produced a conference, Women and Psychedelics, talking about the role of women in psychedelic science. We produced another conference called Queer in Psychedelics. We're talking about the role of queer people in psychedelic science. We produced Psychedelic Liberty Summit. It's a conference that is giving a great access to reflections on medicalization, commodification, legalization, access, inclusion, diversity, people of color. We created another conference called Cultural and Political Perspectives on Psychedelic Science, which also tries to bring in the voice of indigenous people, to bring in the voice of these aspects that normally, you know, appear on the hallways or on the potlucks or on the gatherings of people. That's what really people talk about. But it's not on the conference itself, or it's not on the publication itself. It's not on the clinical trial itself, but it's what everybody's talking about all the time. But it's kind of doesn't get a chance to, you know, it's not funded. It's not really recognized. It's, you know, the philanthropic dollars are not there. It's about this, you know, in everybody there is a kind of social scientist. When people get together, they talk about life. They talk about things. They try to understand things. They try to figure out. They observe trends. They get upset with, you know, a lame person that is misrepresenting himself. And so we're trying to, you know, give a form and a space and a platform for these conversations to happen. And it's our hope that by doing that, we're helping to mitigate these risks that you were addressing, by which, you know, the mainstreaming of psychedelics will just in the end help increase these inequalities and these gaps.
Bea, you are yourself a PhD anthropologist, and I understand that you arrived in this role that you now have, many roles, in fact. You have many, many roles, initially from a love of plants. And I'm just curious, just to locate our audience who may not be familiar with you. Now, of course, we'll talk about you in the introduction to the podcast and the work that you are doing with CIIS, the work you do with MAPS, all these different organizations that you work with. But I'm just kind of curious about your own personal relationship to the plants and to psychedelic healing. And I'm curious why you are personally so passionate about these psychoactive substances and the cultures and communities from which they come.
Because they are mega cool.
That is a great answer.
I'm not the only one. And hey, yo, audience, I was chatting with Eamon in the background, and I know that he also thinks that all of this is pretty cool, and that also captured his heart. So he's, you know, interviewing me, but I know that he's also seen that bright light, you know. So it is like, it's hard to describe, because when you take my primary medicine has been ayahuasca, although I've also have a kind of connection and friendship with peyote, and I have also, you know, done different medicines and psilocybin mushrooms, and I've tried a lot of things through the years. But, you know, the first time I took ayahuasca, it was a real beautiful encounter, and I kind of felt like I was home. You know, it's arriving to this other dimension that everything kind of makes a lot of sense, and you have a lot of clarity about life and existence in a very profound and foundational way, about just being a human being and just, you know, the connection between you and your ancestors and the invisible world and, you know, what comes after and this totality and the fact that we are part of this adventure called life and that we are passengers here and that we're trying to figure out and a lot of existential issues that, you know, us as modern or postmodern beings suffocated with multiple influences of, you know, social media and information and different expert systems and different pressures for you to be better in all your fronts as a woman, as a mother, as a brother, as a professional, as a person that is looking good and dressing well and speaking well. And, you know, we are all massacred in this current post-modern times of multiple demands. And I think psychedelics really do help us connect to something very human and very spiritual and very pure and very simple and very powerful and very, you know, true, that really teaches a lot. And so I have a deep gratitude. I have a deep reverence. You know, I deeply honor these plants in my heart. They have taught me a lot. They help me be a better person. They help me be an expert on this topic because I dedicated my life to this because I like them, because I like the traditions and the cultures that created them, because these things, they don't appear, you know, in a vacuum out of the blue. They are deeply related to traditional cultures that have been incredibly resilient despite colonization, despite all the attacks, despite all the genocide, the violence, and, you know, everything that happened to them, still hold these traditions and have been still incredibly generous in receiving outsiders and foreigners and people that are searching for healing. And I have a lot of good friends, you know, in the Amazon and in ayahuasca communities that are just doing a lot of beautiful work, helping people and creating a sense of community and of brotherhood, of understanding, of healing, of gratitude, of compassion, of kindness, everything that is most needed in our world. Everything that we can, you know, grab as hope, as a new imagined utopia and a new imagined future for us as a collective. And so I have learned a lot. I am deeply grateful. Every time I drink ayahuasca, I still feel, you know, I am a student. This path is huge and never ending. It shall go until I die. And it's just a path, and you're just traveling it and learning about it. And it's great. And being in the Bay Area and being this, you know, decade and time of humanity is a great privilege. I feel a great honor to be here serving this cause, serving the plants, serving this larger vision, imagining hope, working for a better world, working for more community, working for more justice, working for more inclusion, working for the real teachers, the real PhDs of this world are the indigenous people that brought this to us. They are the experts.
Thank you. That's totally perfect and perfectly said. And I want to point our attention to someone who's a little earlier on that path. And for an example, I'm going to use a friend of mine named Munjal. Munjal discovered psilocybin and it woke him up. It got him off of Adderall, helped him connect to the natural world. He loved it. And he decided that he wanted to dedicate his life to it. And he decided, I want to be a psychedelic therapist, which is a beautiful calling. He wants to then take what he learned and he wants to give it to other people. He wants to support other people. And he's just kind of getting started. So for someone like Munjal, or for anyone who's listening, who is earlier on in a path and is deeply passionate about wanting to help heal others through psychedelics, help awaken others through psychedelics, what advice would you give them in terms of where to start and how to learn and educate themselves so that they don't make some of the mistakes that could happen by not being familiar with these traditions, not being familiar with kind of being in right relation to these substances and these cultures? For Munjal and people like him, how do we get started on a healing path to support others with psychedelics?
Well, you know, I guess here I'm going to have to pull my nerdy anthropologist hat. And what can I say? I am a nerdy researcher. When I am interested in anything, I go read, you know, got to do some homework. So go read, go study, get informed, talk to people. This is not going to be downloaded to you, you know, just by taking the plants. The plants are a great inspiration, but if you don't do some, you know, homework and get informed, you can also get fooled by the plants. The plants can also trick you. You can also, you know, we kind of make fun. We have a lot of, you know, I'm Latin. We like to do a lot of jokes. I try to take it easy in the U.S. because some of them are not necessarily well understood. But, you know, among the jokes we make are like, I'm going to have a t-shirt saying, ayahuasca told me, because everybody has a message from ayahuasca. You know, oh, ayahuasca told me this, and I got this message from ayahuasca, and so now I'm going to do this and that, you know. I took psilocybin once, and then I saw it that I should, you know, open a business and heal everybody. It's like, calm down, you know. There's a lot of people, ayahuasca, psilocybin, San Pedro, you know, all of this plants, they talk to a lot of people and say a lot of things. So you have to combine your inspiration from the plants with some homework, with some research. So you're going to read about it, and then you're going to look for the elders and the people that have been around longer than you, just like with anything else, right? If you want to start, you know, decide you're going to be a cook, and then you go ask, you know, the people that have been cooking for all their lives, how can I do this? Can I hang out with you here for a while? Can you teach me, you know, the best sauces and the best tricks you have? I think the main problem of the newcomers, and not all of them, of course, there's wonderful newcomers and we have to welcome them all. It's not up to us to be gatekeepers and say, you know, we're here before and you never can get into our little club because we're so special, we're so cool, we're the pioneers. And I am even not a pioneer at all because I've been doing this 23 years. There are people that have been doing 30, 40, 50. So, you know, I'm already a generation after the real pioneers. or two, I mean, the pioneers in the Western world, let's say, not to talk about indigenous traditions. So we can't say nobody is welcome. But what is irritating and frustrating is these people that want to invent the wheel. And, you know, they had a few psychedelic experiences. They feel a calling and they think they know everything. And there's a lot of arrogance there. And then there's just the opportunistic people, too, who are just after the next book. And that's not, you know, it's nothing new under the rainbow. This happens in all areas. You have people that are, you know, just interested in making money. And, you know, this is the new golden El Dorado. So people are hustling. The truth is, it's hard to make money. And everybody's trying. So some people, you know, I discovered this, or I had a nice experience. I want to make money. Whoa, I'm going to invest in this. But what are the traditions? What are the roots? What are the standards? What is the community? What are our values? And then for those of us who care, it hurts our feelings, you know. It puts distance between us and them. And we're trying to bridge this distance and trying to, you know, tell these people that there are ways that you can participate in this movement. But being mindful, are you reciprocating to indigenous people? What are you giving back? Who are you talking to? Don't invent the wheel. Try to honor the elders. Make friends in the community. Slow down. Breathe. Ask questions. Study. Research. There's a lot of things you can do. Donate your time, you know, create a project that has a community extension. So I think it's not a mystery. It's like anything, you know, deep inside people know what is right. You know, just some people are lazy or don't have the time. And others, you know, there's others that are never going to be doing the right thing. And those, you know, exist everywhere. And so we dedicate a few of our time calling them out and a few of our time trying to straighten these things up. But we can't spend our whole life trying to criticize all the people that are doing bad things, because their rhythm is very fast and they have a lot of money. So we are also trying to create proactive, positive actions, concrete actions to bring better things in the world. Because that's also, you know, the phenomena of some people that are just criticizing, but they don't offer solutions, because it's also hard to know how to do things and how to do things right. I think the psychedelic community is in a phase that everybody is talking about, you know, the need to reciprocate and how can these new businesses and these new corporations and this new venture capital money and this new interest, how can they give back to the psychedelic community? A lot of us agree that they should. A lot of us agree that there should be a system to reciprocate. However, how? That's also hard. We also have to create those systems. And so we are also working on this kind of thing, Intrakrina. So, you know, for your friend Munjal, I say you can visit our site. And, you know, we are always open to talking to people. We very much need support and donations. And we do a series of programs on our part that are, you know, initiatives geared towards creating these bridges, towards creating these critical reflections, towards increasing the visibility of minorities in our field.
You mentioned reciprocity. And specifically saying that reciprocity is something that we all agree on, but we're not quite sure how to do right. For an individual healer, an individual therapist, I'm not talking in this case about a big corporation or someone who's trying to dominate the world with all of the possible clinics that you could make, but just for an individual practitioner, how would you advise someone like that to go about giving back to the psychedelic community broadly?
Yeah, this is, you know, this is a kind of question that reemerges over and over again, because in the end, like when I give lectures, I almost always want to say, you know, those people that don't have a question about what are the impacts of ayahuasca globalization or how can we do better, want to make a question, because I know that question is going to appear. And you know, it's hard. As I said, we're trying to create different, you know, we have a series of initiatives in Intrakrina, we're trying to create, we're basically trying to empower people of color, indigenous people in the field. So we're trying to give them more visibility through our conferences and through our publications. We have one page called People of Color Making a Difference in Psychedelic Healing. So it's kind of a profile of people of color and their, you know, main lectures and achievements that people can look in, and then they can, you know, invite for media interviews, documentaries, conferences and stuff. And then we're curating another series called Empowering Therapists of Color in the Field of Psychedelic Science, which is to help, you know, therapists of color become more researchers, clinicians, subjects of research, have more of their own voice. And we're trying to create a page called Giving Back to the Amazon. So trying to curate, you know, a series of grassroots nonprofit organizations in the Amazon and in all the countries that have the Amazon, like Ecuador, Brazil, Colombia, Peru, like grassroots indigenous organizations that you can connect to and give back. So we're trying to create that. We're, you know, creating this series about people of color. Also, we just launched this video about Kilindi, who was a big pioneer. He passed from COVID last April, and he was a Black researcher and leader and community activist. And we're trying to honor him and his legacy. So we are particularly involved in a series of initiatives. You know, I can speak about what we are trying to do. In terms of the individual, I think, you know, people have to find projects that they align with and try to dedicate to those projects, to, you know, to making connections that are significant and to finding projects that they are aligned to and supporting those projects. So a lot of people love ayahuasca and, you know, say ayahuasca is their great teacher and their great friend and savior, but, you know, they don't make a lot of efforts to connect to this root. So I'm telling these people that if you love ayahuasca, try to learn the language. Try, when you do your trips to the Amazon, try to talk to the locals. Try to ask questions. Try to get informed about culture. Read anthropology. And I think also when, you know, you want to bring indigenous people into our conferences or to our events or create reciprocity, the main foundational question you should make yourself is, what is there for indigenous people in this initiative? Like, what does this matter for them? What is there for them? Because these minorities, they can't be there just to satisfy our need for representation and inclusion. Mm. It has to be interesting for them on their own terms. What is there for them? So you don't want to just look Black people to ask them to deal with your, you know, learning about racism and trying to be a better ally. You should reach out and say, how are you doing? Are you doing well? How can I help you? How can I support you? What do you need from me? You're a philanthropist. You have philanthropic dollars. Don't invent the wheel. Like, here is a project, a money for you to do this project. Go to the field and see what people are already doing and try to support the initiatives that exist on the ground. When you want to create projects that are community-based. They are collaborative. So people, if you're inviting minorities and people of color, indigenous people to your projects, is this a true partnership? Are they in positions of power in your team? Do they have decision-making? Were they included since the beginning? Are they on board with everything? Or are they there just to be a brown or Black face to justify diversity in your project, in your website? And so this means, you know, doing things with people, reflecting on how to give back and be reciprocal. It involves creating relationships that take time. It involves taking time. It involves building these relationships, that building trust that takes time, that earns, you know. I think in a way it's easier to convince a millionaire to give you money than to convince an indigenous person or a person of color, you know, to trust you, because these communities have a lot of mistrust. And to get that trust and to get that respect, that is golden. And that takes work and that takes time and that takes, you know, humility. And I think if you are truly interested, you have to work with grassroots organizations, grassroots indigenous people, grassroots nonprofits that are working on this interface. And, you know, make yourself available, do your homework. I mean, it's also just not about donating. It's not like I donated, checklist, I'm an ally, I'm good. I think it starts with donating often, but it's much more than that. It's about creating these relationships. It's about creating this trust. It's about being truly invested in helping the other one's needs. That's at the base of it. I know it's a bit abstract. I hope it helped.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think much like a ceremony, much like a psychedelic experience, there's a kind of initiatory quality to approaching with humility. The way you described it, you slow down. If you want to enter into these relationships in right relation, you have to let them change you. You know, it's not just about going to this person and saying, okay, I want to be more diverse, but to actually slow down and be humble and look at the places in you that may have been wounded by this kind of modern capitalist climate that we're in, and actually submit and surrender to actual change. And that can be very scary and hard for people.
Yeah, I think, you know, I see a lot of people that are supposedly progressive or supposedly, you know, into social justice. And they have a lot of, you know, lessons about telling people what to do. But if you look at their own teams, it's not diverse. They don't have any people of color in their own teams. So I have been learning a lot. You know, I am 49 and I immigrated here 3 years ago. So, you know, I lived the great majority of my life outside the United States. And for me, the United States is a foreign land. So I am the gringa here. You know, I am like that American that goes to South America and he wants to do things right. And I'm trying to learn, you know, about American culture as well. And it's kind of funny because Americans tend to think they don't have a culture because it's such a global culture and so international and I guess so mediatic and so informed by TV and, you know, about, you know, this kind of product that is global, travels everywhere. But there is a strong culture and ethics here. And I have been incredibly grateful because I have been taught by the best, the creme de la creme of social justice activists. And I have really learned a lot with my Black friends and with my new friends, my new queer friends. So I have always had a very hard time in like coming out, you know, that I have a wife. And I have always like had a really hard time in saying that out loud in public. And California has been a true libertation for me. I find it so relieving to be here. I can be myself. I can wear my t-shirts. I can, you know, wear my baseball caps. I can hang out and be free and be more relaxed and more happy and less judged. And I just feel very oppressed by gender, you know, roles that we have. We're so oppressed as women in Latin America, this Christian upbringing and this moralistic, you know, conservative backgrounds, both Mexico and Brazil, terrible in that. And so I have learned a lot here. And I've also learned with the social justice movement, you know, Black Lives Matter and all that is happening here right now on how to really pay attention and how to really do the good work. So we have so many resources, and the United States, with all the paradoxes and the hate and you know, the inequalities and the injustice, I still think it's the birthright of a lot of civil liberties and a lot of progressive ideas that are influencing the whole world and the planet. And I'm deeply grateful for the protests that are happening right now. And a lot of what I did was always kind of social justice because I was always with, you know, women, with people from Brazil, Mexico, you know, Latin and anthropology and indigenous people, ritual, ceremony, tradition. But when I arrived in California, I kind of got the training and the idiom of the U.S. and of the social justice movement. And that really blended together well, you know, because I got more like a theoretical and practical standing for the kind of work that I do that was more like intuitive and more just what I do, you know, it's just what I do because that's what I know how to do. And now I feel like it's a better, you know, shape. And if I, as a foreigner, could get all of that in the United States, why can't Americans get it? I mean, Americans already have it. We have so much in here that, you know, some of us dream to come here to find this. And the Americans sometimes take for granted that all these wonderful things that are so progressive are at their backyard. So we don't have to, you know, to go too far away to do the research on how to do the good research. I think the U.S. has a lot to teach us on this. And so if people want truly to be mindful, ethical, to do things in a good way, all they got to do is pay a little bit of attention of what's going around us right now.
I love your liberation and the story of your liberation. And it brought up something personal that I wanted to share with you. I had a beautiful ayahuasca ceremony where I got to be a woman for the whole ceremony. So the entire time I was in the ceremony, I got to be my woman self, myself as a woman. And it was enormously liberating. And I think that gender is a really interesting aspect of psychedelic healing. The liberation from the oppressive strictures of gender, whether that is in sexuality or just, you know, what it means to be a man or a woman in the culture that you come from. And so when you were talking about your pride and being able to wear your t-shirts and your baseball cap and talk about your wife, I think that that's there's a liberation in being in San Francisco for that. There's also, I think, the plants are really good about that particular kind of liberation in my experience and in the conversations I've had. They do seem to do such a wonderful job of liberating us from these kind of gender, these confining gender norms. It's one of the things I like most about ayahuasca.
Yeah, when we held Queer in Psychedelics, it was so... I had been, you know, with my partner for 7 years and like what the Americans call like in the closet. And then I am such a conference nerd. So I met my wife in a conference and, you know, we broke up a while and then we got back together again in a conference. And so when I decided that I was like going to come out on the American terms, I said, let's make a conference to celebrate it.
Wow. That's why you made Queering Psychedelics to celebrate your own coming out. That's beautiful.
Yeah, part of it. I mean, it was also an intellectual vision. And so we had cultural and political perspectives on psychedelic science that was in CIIS. In that conference, we kind of laid the agenda of all the areas that we had interest. So we had something about indigenous people, something about regulation, criminalization, legalization. We had one about people of color. We had one about gender and things like that. We had one, I guess, the first panel on commodification of psychedelics that happened in any conference, you know, that we know of. And we had also one about the emerging profession of psychedelic therapists, which is another huge topic that I'm pleased that you guys are tackling this podcast with this specific focus. We also have a lot of need, you know, for a culture around that to develop. And so that topic of queers appeared in that first conference in 2018. And then we saw kind of a need because it's so obvious, the queer world and the world of psychedelics, they have so many overlaps and it's so obvious, but kind of people don't put those things together. So we talked, you know, there was a historical dimension between the emergence of the two fields. There was a reflection about how traditional people have dealt with concepts of gender and in their traditions. So we had, you know, a person like discussing this whole idea of two-spirit, also thinking about psychedelics' potential to heal queer people because there's high, you know, levels of trauma, of depression, of suicide, and, you know, a lot of mental health issues, a lot of shame, and a lot of internalized homophobia or internalized guilt. So psychedelics could be very liberating for these populations. But we also wanted to talk about specific needs of these populations and how psychedelics, you know, might, how to deal, treat these populations and whether they needed special conditions. So the conference was all about this. And, you know, it was also my coming out. And it was just incredible because the kinds of people that attended an event, it was like, if you had done like a whistle and then all these rats that were hiding, you know, in all their, you know, hiding spots everywhere on the wood stalks, they all lined up together and whoop, they were all there. And so a very specific kind of niche that it was just a really magical event. You know, somebody would say some complete remote quote. In 1972, somebody published this, and then somebody from the crowd, no, 1973, like, it's a bunch of nerds, the best nerds ever, and super happy and super positive vibes. And that, you know, had people telling these stories, like, psychedelics helped me, you know, be free. It was one dimension, like, psychedelics are queer, and, you know, it's a double process, because it's beyond gender, and it's beyond spirit, you know, it's beyond in a way all of this, but it's also very embodied. And we also can't deny gender and race and sexuality when we talk about psychedelics. So this is at the core of another, you know, set of really juicy and complex issues that have to do with, you know, people's understanding. Like anything progressive that we publish on Chikruna, and you can see that in MAPS is 10 times more, like anything slightly progressive, like more social justice, you get a huge amount of backlash. Like, oh, the intersectionality cult and the Marxists, or, you know, what does psychedelic have to do with race, with gender, with sexuality? Oh, you're polluting, and this is about oneness, and you're creating division. And no, oh, you know, I don't see color, and why you guys this have, why take your politics away? So it's important to, you know, to educate these people. And so I want to say that, yes, about the oneness and the liberation of your gender and sexuality through psychedelics. Yes, totally. But also, let's not forget that it's an embodied experience that is, you know, happening in certain social contexts. And I'm just afraid that this discourse of oneness and unity kind of is used and appropriated, you know, for a kind of very conservative political narrative that denies the history of this thing. So Chikruna is trying to talk about those things. Psychedelics are not beyond society. They happen in cultural settings. They happen in certain, you know, places and spaces. And you bring race experiences, you bring racialized or sexualized experiences with you to your psychedelic journey. And that culture also reflects back on you. So we have to think about all those things. So yes to mixing politics and psychedelics. Yes to mixing social justice and psychedelics. That is also part of the work we're doing. And, you know, I feel there's a urgent need to educate the psychedelic community, because the levels of political alienation and spiritual bypassing are very big. So for those who are not familiar with this idea, it's pretty simple. So the idea, you know, that you had an incredible spiritual revelation and you saw the light and everything is oneness and we're all together. This can be and has been used a lot to not really deal with the problems and the challenges and to kind of make a rosy narrative that everything is fine and well. And it's actually an escape route to dealing with facing the challenges, the problems, the need to growth, to transform, and to do more work. So this idea, I took this magic pill and now, you know, I had this incredible experience and I'm cured and healed. This has been quite prevalent, unfortunately. And the other problem is the other, you know, sad thing in pandemic, sad, is the all bullshit of the whole conspiracy theories. And oh my God, so sad to see like so many people in ayahuasca circles. I got out of Facebook, thanks God, God bless. I'm free and happy now out of Facebook, although I am in Instagram. Okay. Nothing is perfect. But anyway, we all got our, you know, addiction to social media these days. But in Facebook, see so much trash with all these theories. And of course, conspiracy theories. Of course, some of it is true. That's why there are conspiracy theories. They are based on true things here and there. Yes, there is things here and there that are true. But the way it's, you know, combined and the way it's wrapped up together, it's just not helpful. And so a lot of I feel that a lot of people in the psychedelic community have, you know, been giving voice to conspiracy theories. And so now in the moment of Black Lives Matter and in the moment of pandemic, I find that there has been a spiritual bypassing, alienation to political activism, lack of recognition of the importance of Black Lives Matter, and conspiracy theories. And so, you know, like everything, psychedelics is part of life, and there's all kinds of folks in there, and there's all kinds of influences, and there's all kinds of mentalities. We can, you know, spend a lot of time lamenting. We can alienate. We can do nothing about it. We can just trash everybody in Facebook, or we can try to do concrete actions to improve things. So if you're listening to this, you like what I'm saying, and you're identified, come join the movement. We need you. We need all people. We need all kinds of people in this movement. It's a very new movement. It's vibrating. We are building something. This is historical. We are creating a new, you know, period for this movement. It's just on the verge of a lot of things happening. So you're, you know, you're arriving, talking about your friend again, Mujal, or whatever was his name. You're arriving in a nice period. You have a chance to, you know, help plant these trees that will blossom and that will bring shade to us, because we need shade and we need to plant those trees and we need to believe in something.
I love what you're saying, and I feel like it really comes down to the point that psychedelic healing is not individual healing. Psychedelic healing is community healing. Psychedelic healing is societal healing. And when you approach a space that you feel is new, but you're bringing your unconscious biases with you, you're going to replicate the old space. So psychedelics are in and of themselves not going to birth this new world. They're a tool, they're catalyzers, but we really do need to do our work, do our homework. And there's a piece of the work and homework in this social justice conversation that fits so well into our conversation about psychedelic medicine, which is trauma. So you had mentioned that when you publish progressive pieces, pieces that are talking about social justice, you get a lot of pushback. And a lot of that pushback is actually, I believe, based on people's own trauma triggers and then seen through the lens of kind of divisiveness and polarization. And then there's a spiritual bypassing to try to avoid it. To me, it all comes down ultimately to trauma. Okay, so for example, for me, I am a white male. And by all accounts, a mostly cis white male, right? And so I have trauma personally around being the descendant of colonizers. That's actually a trauma. And the trauma is, I don't want to be a bad white person. So if you say something to me that is, you know, progressive, this social justice, if I haven't done the work to explore that trauma, I'm going to initially respond and be like, no, it's not that. I'm not that person. And I'm angry at you for making me feel like I'm this bad person. This is a dynamic that is at play with these issues of social justice. And I think it comes down to trauma. And so what psychedelics can do to not just heal the individual, but to ultimately heal the individual and the world is allow us to meet that trauma and come into right relation with our ancestral history. In my case, it's the ancestral history of people who colonized Australia and people who colonized the United States. That's in my history. And so I have that trauma, and I'm not going to heal that trauma by bypassing it, by taking, you know, taking ayahuasca, feeling like we're all one, and therefore I'm absolved of my personal privilege and how it actually harms people. Rather, I can feel, oh, I actually do feel a deep grief and shame in this, my ancestor. So what, how does that move me to act? And I think psychedelics can help that if, and only if, we as the psychedelic community are constantly holding each other accountable.
Yeah, you said a lot of things, and you know, it's thanks for sharing that, and you know, for your sharing your Irish past, that, you know, carrying in your DNA all that you bring. A lot of aspects to everything you said, but I think, you know, one aspect most definitely common is that it's really not just about the individual. And that's also why I say that all this research about psychedelic healing and, you know, the benefits of psychedelics on individuals, it's just a limited part of it. We really have to create an understanding that is more collective. And, you know, traditionally, psychedelics have nothing to do with something individual only. Traditionally, psychedelics have been used always in group rituals and by groups and are affairs of the whole community. So this idea, you know, that a specific substance heals a specific disease and for a specific individual, it's a very reductionistic approach. Healing is in terms of traditional practices, is really much more of a holistic affairs and has to do with the relationships of the individual with himself, but also of the individual with other individuals, of the individual with the invisible world or, you know, the larger cosmological world of ancestors. And traditionally, disease, the concept of disease is very influenced by this idea that there is some kind of imbalance and some kind of disharmony between spheres. So it's really not just about healing the individual, but disease have to do with relationships, with communication between different spheres. And that healing is also something that operates on a larger level and have to do with who the person is, with kinship, with relationships, with community. I mean, there's wonderful literature about all of that. And, you know, this is also why, like, these substances are not considered in traditional settings something that is counterculture or, like, revolutionary or underground or edgy. But it's part of culture. It's a legitimate, central, foundational part of culture. Through psychedelics, traditional populations have, you know, created and received myths that inform their origin on why we are humans, why we are here, how we came to be. And, you know, psychedelics are related to the transmission of knowledge, to transmitting to new generations the good values, the stories, the foundations, the pillars of traditional communities, with establishing relationships to the lands. And so this is, you know, this is another aspect of that has happened in this movement. It's the same thing of, like, spiritual bypassing. Oh, you know, like, recently there has been this discourse, you know, certain segments of the psychedelic movement saying things like, oh, you know, peyote belongs to the whole humankind. It belongs to Mother Nature. It's been delivered to us. And, you know, the indigenous people were the guardians of this knowledge. This is a way to erase indigenous people and to deny, you know, that these substances come from certain cultures and certain contexts, and they are based on these relationships. And when you look, you know, to why traditional people use the substances, it's not just about healing themselves. It's like about, you know, honoring the ancestors so that the sun is up in the sky every day. It's about making your death and your travel to the other world possible. Psychedelics are deeply ingrained in the, you know, in being human, and that's being part of the cultures. That's not just about the individual. And I want to throw in there another piece. I want to talk to you, psychedelic therapists, and you American psychedelic therapists that are hearing me now.
You totally nailed it. We always end the podcast with you, the guest, speaking directly to the psychedelic therapist. So I'm so happy, Bia. You are nailing it. Take us home.
Well, maybe it's your Irish ancestors channeling something to me, because we are seeing each other and we, you know, exchanging smiles like a good conversation that don't transmit, you know, on the radio, but they exist and they permeate with love, you know, this conversation that I offer with love, with humbleness, with gratitude. So that's appreciated. What I want to say to the psychedelic therapist, I want people to think about this concept of trauma. And maybe that's anticlimax for all that I was saying before. But I feel this concept is a bit loose, you know. As an anthropologist, and again, my PhD, kind of more boring scientific hat, I feel this concept has been a bit, you know, overrated? Like, it's become too diffuse. I'm a little bit bothered. Like, shamanism is a concept or, you know, totemism was one of those concepts that it became so many things that anthropologists have a problem with. Shamanism is another of those concepts that it's so many things that anthropologists have a problem with. So I'm not a psychologist, although I'm married to one, and both my parents are psychologists, and I did therapy over 10 years. So I consider that I have a lot of bonus in the world of therapists because I have a lot of them around me, and therapists often think they are so smart and they are smarter than everybody else. There's that. I also teach with, you know, in a school of psychology of the East-West program in CIIS. So I invite psychologists. I invite you, psychedelic therapists. I invite you, bright new mind. I invite you, full of energy, want to come to psychedelics, feeling great, want to join the cause, want to join the movement. I think we can refine this concept of trauma. And trauma has become something that is kind of, you know, everything is trauma and everybody has trauma. And here is a bit like, I talked this with my wife and we get into arguments about it. There's areas that we don't agree because I also feel there's a lot of privilege in this notion of trauma, but I think that's kind of thing that people, you know, don't like here. But in Brazil, like, I don't know, if I want to say everything that happened to me in terms of violence, I carry a lot of trauma. Yeah, but we don't go around saying I have trauma. And what she says is that you should. You should, like, understand that you have trauma and that some reactions you're doing are, you know, due to that trauma. And what I say is I think there's poor people and, you know, it's not my case. I was not brought up on those conditions, but Brazil is extremely poor. And, you know, I don't think poor people are saying, oh, I have trauma. So I just, you know, I would like to explore this relationship between trauma and privilege. And just also refine the category of trauma. What is it? So if something bad happens to me, is that a trauma? Like I got a gun pointing at me several times and, you know, I had other things. That's a trauma. And I feel, you know, I would like to understand better. I don't think it's wrong. It's just unclear. Also, the very idea of PTSD, I think we should better say, not to the psychedelic therapist, but to the philanthropist and to the leaders of the movement, let's invest money in trying to refine and study better these concepts of trauma, PTSD, and racial trauma as well. Racial trauma is very underlooked, and I believe it's real. And Dr. Monica Williams, she's a part of our team and a great friend, and I have curated a special edition with her on equity, diversity, and access. And a few authors called the attention of the need to study racial trauma, that has been overlooked in the DSM-5. So I think for the psychedelic therapist, that's where the homework is, understanding more all these concepts, trauma, PTSD, racial trauma, offering an original contribution on that field is something that we very much need as this movement grows and blossoms.
Amen to that. Wow. Nice closer, Bia. I think that that's a great invitation for people listening to decide where they want to really focus their skills and their expertise. And on a personal note, this is beyond the scope of the podcast, but I am personally interested in this idea of trauma and privilege. It's an interesting point, and I hope that we can have another conversation in the future, either on a podcast or just privately, and noodle even more on this idea of trauma and privilege, because I think there's something there that I'd like to learn more about. So that's a cliffhanger for the audience. We don't have time to talk about more of that today, but maybe we'll do a follow-up podcast. Bia, thank you so much for being on the show and for giving your wisdom and your energy and showing up today for this conversation. How can the folks listening support you, follow your work? Where do they need to go? I know we're probably all familiar with Chacruna, but specifically, how can people follow you? How can people support you?
I'll say that, but I just want to say one final thing. So this company is called Maya Health. And, you know, I want to invite you guys to study the roots of the Maya civilization and their relationship to psychedelics. And maybe you can dedicate a portion of your income to studying more and giving more visibility to the Maya world and their relationship to psychedelics. Mm. I lived 5 years in Mexico, and it's just so, and I've worked 8 years altogether in Mexico, 3 from far away and 5 living over there. Mexico is a civilization born you know, with the ancient cultures of Mexico, they were entirely psychedelic and psychoactive. And that civilization was born on this basis. And there is so little money and so little research and so little done to honor, you know, the roots of this traditions and in terms of the Mexican identity. And I stayed many years trying to do this work in Mexico, and it was very hard. There is no institutional support or funding. You know, there is some archaeological work, finding a lot of evidence. And the Mayas were especially cool in everything they did with psychedelics. They were incredibly, you know, creative. There's also a lot of things that we don't know and don't talk about, such as all kinds, you know, Aztec and Mayas and ancient civilizations had all kinds of snuffs and enemas and, you know, things that are maybe less popular in the trending. So we got a few of those substances, and we adore them. And perhaps, you know, we're not revering things like enema so much. You know, they didn't get to be as trending in for us. But that's an invitation I wanted to make to you guys to, you know, dedicate research dollars and funding to those kinds of knowledge. We have been trying to publish Mazatec people and people Shipibo and from South America and put them in our conferences. And we also have a blog that we're renewing that we're calling Chicrina Latino America that we want to publish in Portuguese and Spanish. And you can follow us in chicrina.net. And I am on Instagram and I am on Twitter. You can join our newsletter. We're doing one, two, or three webinars per month. And we're publishing articles and we have different programs. And, you know, we just made a membership program. I forgot. It's just made. And so you can become a member and support our vision and mission. So far, we don't have any advertisements on the site. And I also created this little joke that I took a lot of psychedelics, but I didn't figure out how to make money yet. And so psychedelics didn't help me on that. And so we're trying still to figure out our sustainability. And we need, you know, if you like, spreadsheets and business models. And I don't have those kinds of friends too much yet. And so we need support of those good fellows that, you know, want to help build the sustainability of this movement. I think that's all of us, all the nonprofits and the psychedelic organizations. That's what we need. We need business people that can help us with sustainability, and we need support to make it financially viable. And thank you very much. And I really had a lot of fun and enjoyed meeting you.
I did too, Bia. Thank you so much for your wisdom and thanks for the space that you're holding in this movement. It is rigorous, to say the least. And yeah, grateful for your time and your wisdom today.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us on the Psychedelic Therapy Podcast. If you enjoyed this show, please join the Psychedelic Therapy Facebook group to talk about it. You can also share it with your friends or leave a review on iTunes so more people can discover the show. The Psychedelic Therapy Podcast is presented by Maya, a platform designed to help psychedelic therapists manage and measure client journeys. You can head to mayahealth.com to learn more. The show is for informational purposes only and is not intended to provide mental health or medical advice. Thanks for listening.